It is Friday, the 15th of January, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. I'm in Washington. Coming your way, the marathon U.S. political campaign leading up to the next presidential election seems to be getting more and more raucous. You'll hear from an expert who says this is not something new in the United States.
America has always been polarized. It's always been partisan. The founders of our country back in the 18th century were a polarized and partisan lot.
Rick Pantaleo will be here with a story of something massive and unknown found in outer space. And David Byrd and Shauna Renee have the story of a challenge to a very successful collaboration between Justin Timberlake and Jay-Z. It's all coming your way on International Edition. The top Republican presidential contenders clashed over foreign policy and economic issues Thursday, as well as each other in their sixth debate, this one held in South Carolina. The debate came less than 3 weeks before the first votes are cast in the U.S. presidential election campaign. Not the election, but the campaign. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more.
There was a smaller field of candidates on hand for the South Carolina debate, broadcast on the Fox Business Network, and it led to a number of lively exchanges among the contenders. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush challenged frontrunner Donald Trump over his proposal to ban non-American Muslims from coming to the United States.
I hope you reconsider this, because this policy is a policy that makes it impossible to build the coalition necessary to take out ISIS.
I want security for this country. We have a serious problem with, as you know, with radical Islam. We have a tremendous problem. It's not only a problem here, it's a problem all over the world.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz also clashed with Trump over the claim that Cruz's Canadian birth might make him ineligible for the presidency.
I recognize that Donald is dismayed that his poll numbers are falling in Iowa. But the facts and the law here are really quite clear. Under longstanding U.S. law, the child of a U.S. citizen born abroad is a natural-born citizen.
I already know the Democrats are going to be bringing a suit. You have a big lawsuit over your head while you're running, and if you become the nominee, who the hell knows if you can even serve in office?
Florida Senator Marco Rubio and New Jersey Governor Chris Christie clashed over who is the stronger conservative.
I like Chris Christie, but we cannot afford to have a president of the United States that supports Common Core. We cannot afford to have a president of the United States that supports gun control.
I like Marco, too. And 2 years ago, he called me a conservative reformer that New Jersey needed. That was before he was running against me.
We have to stop this because, you know, if we manage to damage ourselves.
The exchange alarmed neurosurgeon Ben Carson, who urged party unity, a theme some of the others tried out amid the clashes. As a group, there was widespread condemnation of President Obama's foreign policy and warnings from Christie and Rubio that Democrat Hillary Clinton would continue them.
You cannot give Hillary Clinton a third term of Barack Obama's leadership. I will not do that if I'm the nominee.
She wouldn't just be a disaster. Hillary Clinton is disqualified from being Commander-in-Chief of the United States.
The Republican contenders now head back to campaigning in the early voting states of Iowa and New Hampshire. Iowa's caucus voting will be held February 1st. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
In his seventh and final State of the Union address Tuesday, President Obama touted his accomplishments and focused on his vision for the future, an optimistic speech that attempted to define his legacy as he enters his final year in office. One of the president's topics was politics. He pointed to politics that target people because of race or religion.
When politicians insult Muslims, whether abroad or our fellow citizens, when a mosque is vandalized or a kid is called names, that doesn't make us safer. That's not telling it like it is. It's just wrong. It diminishes us in the eyes of the world. It makes it harder to achieve our goals. It betrays who we are as a country.
We welcome Jeffrey Berry. Dr. Berry of Tufts University in Massachusetts is the author of a good number of books, one of which is called The Outrage Industry. Dr. Berry, thanks for being with us. What is the shape of politics now in the United States? Is it more outrageous as it has been in previous years?
It has been. There is more polarization. But just by way of context and background, America has always been polarized. It's always been partisan. The founders of our country back in the 18th century were a polarized and partisan lot. So there's a great tradition here, as it is in all free societies, of people telling it like it is and saying things that are nasty and polarizing, and they do it because they think it is going to benefit them as a commentator or as an elected official.
Well, obviously, Mr. Obama, who has gone through some political campaigning of his own, felt it necessary, I guess, for an international audience to tell other people that bashing them by way of race or religion is something that really hurts. How much do you think it does hurt? How do you think this is received on a worldwide basis?
I think America is seen in a very negative light around the world these days. Largely because of our politics, both domestic and foreign. But Obama's speech took the high road, and I think he hit the passage that you just played is a very eloquent, very passionate appeal to what's best about Americans, and I think that's going to play very well with international audiences.
What about this year's campaign? Donald Trump is getting most of the headlines. Is this caused by what he says? Is this caused by what we know now as the 24-hour news cycle in the United States, or is it a combination of everything?
It's certainly a combination. Trump is a master at outrage. That is, playing on the anger of American public and using the news media, particularly cable television and talk radio, as well as free media, to drive his message home. Remember that he's appealing to people who vote in Republican primaries, and just for your foreign audience, that's about 8% of the American public, so it's a pretty narrow slice, and it's a very conservative slice, and it's almost all white. So when Trump is saying these things, it's not rhetoric that appeals to the broad swath of the American public, but it is rhetoric that appeals to the people who vote in Republican primaries.
Does Trump have a chance of becoming president of the United States?
If you'd asked me that 3 months ago, I would have very confidently said no. What's wrong with you, Ira? But right now, he's a slight favorite, I would say. There's really three candidates at this point that look viable, Trump and Senator Ted Cruz of Texas and Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. The rest of the candidates in the Republican field have fallen far behind.
What do we do about the shape and the tone of politics as media? Is there anything that can be done? And do you think anything's going to happen to maybe calm things down a little bit?
No, I don't think things are going to calm down. This is why. When you look at our outrage media, which is cable television, news commentary, talk radio, political blogs, and social media, they have different incentives. Their goal is to be read, to be heard, to be viewed. And the way that they do that, which is built directly into the business model, is to make people angry, to get them all stirred up. And that is a way to get them to come back the next day to watch, to listen, to hear. And it's a key to the way they make money and attract viewers. So why should they step back from that? They're making money by doing this, so they're going to continue to do this. They're not friends of the political parties. They're friends of the shareholders.
Is this unique to the United States?
Nastiness is not unique to the United States, so we certainly see a lot of the same kind of racial epithets across Europe right now as they struggle with a very difficult immigration problem. So that's not unique to the United States. The kind of media we have is a little bit different. Television in Europe, for example, isn't quite comparable to the television in the United States. And talk radio is more an American creation. than it is a common form of media across the modern world.
Dr. Jeffrey Berry of Tufts University, political science professor, that is in Massachusetts. We thank you very much for being with us on International Edition. Well, Andrew Pelcheski, International Edition social media guru, or whatever name we decide to give him on a weekly basis, pays us a visit again. How much of what has happened in politics, especially since the Republican debate took place last night, is trending on media?
Oh, a lot of it. But there's one thing in particular that's trending, this hashtag New York values. Now, this was something that Senator Ted Cruz said about Donald Trump. He says, oh, he has New York values, trying to appeal to people in Iowa and New Hampshire, throwing two states out there.
Explain that to people who are not going to understand what New York values are.
Well, that's the question on social media that people are debating. People are asking, what does he mean by New York values? Now, Senator Cruz seemed to be implying that Donald Trump has liberal, maybe elitist values. That's what he's referring to as New York values. And a lot of people, New Yorkers and others, are striking back against this, saying, well, New York values are really the people who were the first responders on September 11th when the World Trade Center was hit by the planes. New York values are people riding the subway of all different ethnicities, this city that's this great melting pot of America. And then you have the people on the other side who seem to be defending Senator Cruz, saying, well, New York values, New York always says they're better than the rest of the country, so why are they getting upset about this? So there's this back and forth over, A, what does New York values mean, and B, what does that mean for Donald Trump and Ted Cruz?
And there is a huge, wide dichotomy between urban and rural thought in the United States, as it is worldwide.
Absolutely, and this is kind of crystallizing in this hashtag.
Anything else? What else is going on?
Hashtag spacewalk. Astronaut Tim Peake is the first astronaut from the United Kingdom to walk in space, and so a lot of people are praising him for that, following along as
Jolly
he's walking
good.
In space.
Jolly good, yes.
Jolly good, and as an interesting tie-in to something that happened earlier in the week, people are saying, can you look for David Bowie while you're up there and see if you can find him?
Yep. Captain Tom. Is it Captain? Yeah, right.
Major Tom.
Major Tom.
Well, it's
Sorry
Major Tim
that.
Today.
Major Tim. Andrew Pelcheski. Thanks, Andrew. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Astronomers are watching a fascinating cosmic event some 3.8 billion light years from Earth. But they're not exactly sure what it is. It might be a supernova, a violent stellar explosion. If so, scientists say it has to be the most powerful supernova ever seen. They say the object at the center of this celestial wonder is pumping out the energy of hundreds of billions of suns, yet it's only about 16 kilometers across. Astronomers say the object called Assassin 15LH just might be a magnetar, or a very rare type of star. But even if it is a magnetar, they say it's so powerful that it's pushing the laws of physics. The scientists will look to the Hubble Space Telescope to finally solve this mystery later this year. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Voters in Taiwan go to the polls tomorrow, Saturday, for presidential and legislative elections. International Edition Sarah Williams speaks with VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide. He caught a plane from Beijing to Taiwan today.
Bill, who are the main candidates running for president in this election?
Well, the three main candidates are Tsai Ing-wen, Julie Luan, and James Song. Tsai Ing-wen is with the opposition Democratic Progressive Party. Julie Luan is with the Nationalist Party, or KMT, and James Song is with a smaller party called the People's First Party. Up to this point, and polls have indicated that Tsai Ing-wen has a really good chance of winning tomorrow, that it's almost certain that she's going to win. Now, obviously, things can change, and the weather actually is probably going to be a big factor tomorrow in the turnout, and there is some concern about that. But so far in this race, it really much of the focus has been on not really on the presidential race, because most people assume that Tsai is going to win, but on the legislature and the possibility that the Democratic Progressive Party, the opposition, could win both the presidency and the legislature for the first time in history in Taiwan. So it's another historic moment for Taiwan. It's sixth direct presidential election. But it's also a historic moment because of the possibility that the opposition could then gain control of the legislature, and then we could possibly see some really different things in terms of how laws that would be passed and how Taiwan would approach legislation that deals with China.
Well, certainly the relationship with China is a very a big deal to voters in Taiwan. What are some of the main issues in regard to that? I mean, do people in Taiwan perhaps want some differences with their relationship with the mainland?
Well, they want clarity and respect, I guess, for their position and that of Taiwan and its own identity. They want China to maybe give Taiwan a little bit more respect. China regards Taiwan as a renegade province, as part of its own territory, even though the Communist Party has never ruled and controlled Taiwan. That's the way they look at Taiwan, and they talk about that quite often. They have never, China, Beijing has never said that it would not use force against the island to reach its political goal of unification with Taiwan. So that's one thing that they want. But the big thing that people are talking about and have been talking about and really worrying about over the past few years is the over-reliance, as they see it, on the Chinese economy. And that has been one of the key issues that Tsai Ing-wen has been pushing and promoting, is how do you diversify the economy? She's not saying you cut off ties with China altogether. Nobody can do that. And all candidates want to find ways to get along with China better and benefit from this, you know, the huge economy that's right next door. But they're also looking for ways to kind of branch out into other parts of Asia, to Southeast Asia, and to build on what they see are the strengths that Taiwan has, and then to try to maybe find either its high-tech avenues or mechanization and other raising standards in that area to so that Taiwan could be more competitive.
That's correspondent Bill Ide reporting from Taiwan. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. The Justin Timberlake and Jay-Z hit Suit and Tie made them millions of dollars. It was used for a very popular Bud Light commercial, if you've seen that. But as International Edition's David Byrd and VOA's Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee tells us, there's a group for the 1970s that is suing, claiming that part of the song was their hit, Show Nuff, that was used without permission.
Justin Timberlake and Jay-Z's hit song Suit and Tie was a mega success, but now there's a group that's saying, hey, wait a minute, you didn't pay us to use a part of that. Shauna, what are we talking about here? This reminds me a lot of Blurred Lines with the Marvin Gaye family.
Well, in a way it does. So let me explain what happened. In 2013, on his Love Experience album, Justin Timberlake and Jay-Z released Suit and Tie. And so there apparently is a part of this song that had been sampled from a band called Sly, Slick, and Wicked. And they had a song back in 1973 called Show Nuff. Now, we do know for a fact that that song was sampled. The question here is whether or not the proper rights or the complete rights were paid to the group. The group is saying that they were not paid for the vocal rights or the vocal performance that appeared in Suit and Tie. And on another part here, the Universal Music Group, who is actually being sued, apparently licensed the song for a very popular beer commercial here in the States. And so Sly, Slick, and Wicked are these two members of the group are saying they were never paid for that. And that's the biggest issue because this was a huge campaign. And I'm sure that Universal Music Group and Bud Light and whoever else was involved in this got paid. And they think, well, it was a song that sampled our song, and therefore we should have a cut of this or enjoy a cut of this as well.
Now, this has been an issue since sampling started, though.
If a song has been used, and this is what makes it different from what went on with Blurred Lines, that was a question of whether or not the song inspired the other and to what degree. Here we know that there was a portion of the song that had been sampled. So if, in fact, that happens, I think as an artist, you are well within your rights to say, listen, if you use my music, you should pay for that. If you use part of my vocal performance, then you should pay for that as well.
What do you think? You can let us know. Send a tweet to Shauna. She is at VOA Lady DJ. You can also send one to at VOA underscore IE. And you can log on to our website. That's voanews.com.
Let me show you a few things. Show you a few things about love. Hey.
That's going to wrap up our program for today. Thank you so much for being with us on International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States welcomes the announcement of the Haitian presidential decree calling on the people of Haiti to participate in the second round of the presidential election and remaining legislative elections on January 24th. A Haitian commission created by President Michel Martelly on December 22nd was tasked with probing the country's disputed October 25th presidential election. While the commission's report noted that the first-round vote was impacted by irregularities, it indicated that a final runoff could still take place. The report called for greater transparency, including a national dialogue, an analysis of the vote to determine the extent of the irregularities and fraud, and changes in the electoral process. A number of these recommendations were also noted by other international electoral observation missions during the course of the current electoral cycle. According to official results, government-backed candidate Jovenel Moïse received 32.76% of the vote after the first round of voting, and Jude Celestin, the former head of the State Construction Agency, garnered 25.29%. U.S. State Department spokesperson John Kirby said, "The U.S. looks forward to the completion of the electoral process and encourages all Haitians to participate peacefully and calmly in the vote. This is the opportunity for the Haitian people to have their voice heard regarding the future leader of their country. To that end, the U.S. urges everyone to ensure transparency and credibility in the fundamental democratic process." The United States and Haiti's other international partners urge state institutions and political actors to take all steps necessary to ensure a free and fair process that results in a peaceful transfer of power to a newly elected president by the constitutionally mandated date of February 7th. The United States reaffirms its commitment to working with the Provisional Electoral Council and Haiti's international partners in support of fair, credible, and secure elections that reflect the will of the Haitian people. The United States looks forward to working with the next democratically elected government on the many challenges facing Haiti and its people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email,
visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.